প্রবিষ্ট ভগবান শেষ্টা রূপেণ থম গণম ভীনাম সংযোজয়ম আসা সুপ্তম কর্ম প্রবোধয়ম।
Into the elements by his energy, all the living entities were enlivened into different activities. Just as one is engaged in his work after awakening from sleep, purport by his divine grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Every individual soul remains unconscious after the dissolution of the creation, and thus enters into the Lord with his material energy. These individual living entities are conditioned souls everlastingly, but in each and every material creation, they are given a chance to liberate themselves and become free souls. They are all given a chance to take advantage of the Vedic wisdom and find out what is their relationship with the Supreme Lord, how can they be liberated, and what is the ultimate profit is in such liberation. By properly studying the Vedas, one becomes conscious of his position and thus takes to the transcendental devotional service of the Lord and is gradually promoted to the spiritual sky. The individual souls in the material world engage in different activities according to their past unfinished desires. After the dissolution of a particular body, the individual soul forgets everything, but the all-merciful Lord, who is situated in everyone's heart as the witness, the supersoul, awakens him and reminds him of his past desires. And thus he begins to act accordingly in his next life. The unseen guidance is described as fate, and a sensible man can understand that this continues his material bondage in the three modes of nature. The unconscious sleeping stage of the living entity, just after the partial or total dissolution of the creation, is wrongly accepted as the final stage of life by some less intelligent philosophers. After the dissolution of the partial material body, the living entity remains unconscious for only a few months, and after the total dissolution of the material creation, he remains unconscious for many millions of years. But when the creation is again revived, he is awakened to his work by the Lord. The living entity is eternal, and the wakeful state of his consciousness manifested by activities in his natural condition of life. He cannot stop acting while awake, and thus he acts according to his diverse desires. When his desires are trained in the transcendental service of the Lord, his life becomes perfect, and he is promoted to the spiritual sky to enjoy eternal awakened life. Om Agyantimidandasya Gyananjana Chalakaya Chakshurun Militam Jainatasmoy Sri Guruve Namaha Banshaka. It's been described the process by which the various elements of material existence are created by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Not only the gross and subtle elements, but also the capacity by which they have to perform their particular functions under the direction of the Lord. But everything remains inactive until the Lord Himself, along with His material energy, enters into the creation. It is described here that all living entities, they are impregnated by the Lord into material existence. However, no consciousness is awakened within them until the Lord Himself personally enters into the creation with His material energy, which is primarily constituted of time, and thus activates the creation. It is similar to, we can create a machine, but unless we turn on the power, the machine can do nothing. It is idle. But when we turn on the power, then every function of the machine begins to operate. And what is that power? That power is the divine energy of the Lord. So it is explained how the living entity behaves according to his particular desires within material existence. According to those activities, we fall under the influence of the three modes of material nature. Under the effect of material nature, more desires are cultivated within our hearts. Within our hearts means within our subtle existence of mind, intelligence, and ego. Now, Prabhupada gives a very wonderful example. According to our desires, we have a particular state of consciousness. At the time of death, that state of consciousness will take us to our destination. Just like the wind carries the aroma of a flower from one place to another, in a similar way, by the arrangement of the Lord, our desires cause us to be transported from one species and at the time of death to another. Every aspect of the existence we are born into is a product of our desires in previous lives. And when we enter into the womb of a particular mother, let us say it is the human being, the soul is in an utterly unconscious state, as if it is deeply sleeping. There is no awareness. Of course, people who advocate the terrible crime of abortion, they sometimes argue that there's no awareness in a child until a certain stage. So what is the problem with killing it? But for those who understand the nature of the soul, it is no different than saying, if you are fast asleep and you are not aware of anything, what is the harm in killing you? The fact is that that little baby, even embryo in womb, is as much alive and has taken shelter of a body as much as you have, or I have, or anyone. But in the initial stages, it is sleeping. And at a certain stage within the development of the child within the womb, consciousness awakens by the arrangement of the Lord through material nature. Then the child is actually aware of life and becomes very much happy and distressed by the situations within the womb. Similarly, on a universal level, Srila Prabhupada is so beautifully describing that we are impregnated within the womb of material nature. And we are in a completely unconscious sleeping state. However, the soul is covered by the subtle body. If the soul was not covered by the subtle body, the soul would not be within material existence. When we transcend the desires of material sense enjoyment, either gross or subtle, then we are liberated. What does liberation mean? That you are no longer covered by the subtle body of mind, intelligence, and false ego. At which time, you don't take another birth within this material existence, because there's nothing to keep you here. We are kept here by our desire to be here, by our desire to enjoy the things that Maya is offering us. The material existence is called Durga, or prison. But it is a very unique and wonderful prison, because we can leave this prison immediately if we simply give up our attachment to the prison. But as long as we want to enjoy the things that the prison is provided, we have to remain within this prison. The prisons of this world keep us in captivity by large, high walls and electrical fences, barbed wire fences, so many security guards with various weapons and big fences and steel, sometimes chains. We are like animals in a cage, and we want to get out, but we can't. We're frustrated with what's happening in there, but we can't get out because of the bars and the chains around us. Within the prison houses of this day, nobody likes it. Everyone is just longing, yearning, doing anything to get out. But they cannot, because the bars and the chains are keeping them in. But this prison house of material existence, there's no bars. There's no chains. There's nothing keeping us in here. All we have to do is want to get out. All we have to do is come to the conclusion that nothing in here attracts me. I want to go out into the free world of Vaikuntha. That attracts me. That's my natural position. That's where my real family and friends really are. I'm tired of just associating with so many other criminals and getting so implicated in so many terrible reactions. Let me out. The bars and the chains of this material existence is our own desire to stay here and enjoy. Krishna appears again and again through many avatars, through his servants and representatives, through the scriptures, and tells us, just give up your desire to enjoy what's here. Cultivate a desire to enjoy what is in your real home, and you're free. These desires are what determines all bondage. At the time of death, our desires will carry us to another species of life. When we enter into that next species of life, again we become unconscious. We don't know who we are. We don't know where we are. We're sleeping. Sometimes we have this experience at night. We go to sleep and we don't know who we are or where we are. We don't know anything. That is deep sleep. Sometimes if you visit some other place than your home, when you wake up, first thing in the morning, you don't know where you are. You just look around. Where am I? What am I doing? Who am I? What is this? It takes some time to recognize, oh, I came to this place. But it is actually the super soul within our heart that empowers us to remember our past desires. Otherwise, we have no capacity to do so. Because at the time of death, we literally forget everything. And when we take another birth, we do not remember anything of our past birth, except for on very exceptional karmic situations, we could remember specific details. But we forget everything. We forget who we were, where we lived, who was our friends and relatives, what we did. We don't even remember that we exist at the time of death. Total forgetfulness. But all the desires that we accumulated in all our previous births are present within our mind. And it is the Paramatma, this, who is seated within our heart, who reminds us of those desires. We don't know how those desires came about, where they came about, who we were when they came about, but the desire is awakened within our heart because Krishna reminds us. An example. In a previous life, we may have been very, very greedy for a particular type of sense gratification. We may have had a tremendous greed for power to exploit others. We may have cultivated and very successfully lived within the world according to that desire. And then we die. Now, when we take our next birth, we don't know who we were or where we were or what we were doing, but the desire is in our mind. And then it is Krishna who awakens that desire. We may have been very lusty for sex life in our past life. We don't remember who we were lusty for. We didn't know who we were that was lusty, but the desire was there. And therefore, when we come to consciousness again at a certain stage in our life, Krishna may awaken, the Paramatma will awaken. This is the desire that you have cultivated. See what it is. Otherwise, how is it that we're like this? How is it that there's so much variegatedness in people's desires? It is all due to the residue of our previous existences within various species of life within this material world. So Srila Prabhupada explained everything is based on our desire, and the Paramatma is simply reciprocating with our desire. Sarvasya chaham hridishani vishto matasmitir jnanam apohanam cha vidaishta sarveraham eva vejo vidantakrit veda vedeva chaham. It is explained so nicely in Bhagavad Gita. I am seated as the Paramatma in everyone's heart. I am the source of remembrance, knowledge, and forgetfulness. It is the Paramatma that puts us into that deep sleep where we forget everything. It is the Paramatma who awakens the desires we have created in our past lives. He is the ultimate controller. He is simply directing us in life according to our own ambitions. Therefore, we have no one to blame than ourselves for our own sufferings. Even the mistakes that we make, Krishna is actually leading us to make those mistakes on the basis of our desires. And then we have to get the reactions of those mistakes. So who do we have to blame? Only ourselves. Krishna is just reciprocating with how we are approaching Him. When we speak about approaching Krishna, Krishna's internal feature of the personality of Godhead. If we approach with devotion, Krishna will reciprocate. However, if we approach the Lord with a desire to serve His external energy, which is non-different than Himself, then He will also reciprocate to Paramatma and give us a particular remembrance, a particular consciousness to try to enjoy. Intelligence means to discriminate. What is real and what is illusion? When Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu accepted the renounced order of life at the youthful age of only 24 years old, he came to Jagannath Puri. He met Srila Sarva Bhauma Bhattacharya, who was a very great learned scholar of Vedanta. He was a very old man with much wisdom and experience of the ways of this world. He saw the beauty of Lord Chaitanya's resplendent golden form. He was thinking, how is it that this sannyasi, who was so in the prime of his youth, endowed with such superb beauty, how will he maintain his vows? The only way he could maintain his vows is he has to have a very intelligent power to discriminate between what is real and what is not real. Of course, at that time, Sripad Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya was a follower of the Advaita school. He practiced the teaching of monism, Brahma Satyam Jagan Mitya, that the Supreme Brahman is real, and that this entire universe and everything within it is illusion. Anything that has any type of attributes is an illusion. Reality is without attributes. Anything that is personal is an illusion. Anything with form is illusion. For the absolute truth is formless and impersonal. Therefore, we must discriminate to keep our mind fixed always on Brahman, the true reality, and to continually evaluate the things of this world through the process of neti, neti, neti. I am not this. This is not real. I am not that, and that is not real. I have this body, but I am not this body. I have this family, but I have nothing to do with this family. I have this money, but I have nothing to do with this money. It is all unreal. It is all illusion. Everything. And therefore, the teachings that Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya considered very important for Lord Chaitanya to understand is how to discriminate between matter and spirit, how to discriminate between truth and illusion. And out of great compassion, he volunteered to instruct Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, to help him to overcome the temptations of Maya. Gopinath Acharya, his son-in-law, thought he was very offensive. He's the Supreme Personality of Godhead. What? He is the controller and master of material energy. What do you have to teach him? Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya actually had a parental affection for Lord Chaitanya. He said, I do not find in the scriptures evidence that he is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. I must help him. When Lord Chaitanya heard about this, he said to Gopinathacharya, you should not argue with him. Out of affection, like a father, he wants to help me. Let him help me. Lord Chaitanya was so humble. He sat in Jagannath temple for 7 days and listened to Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya explain the Mayavad conclusions of the Brahma Sutras. Such courtesy, such respect, such compassion. And in the end, Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya asked, why you haven't asked any questions? You're just sitting there. I do not know whether you understand or do not understand. Lord Chaitanya said, I understand. It's quite clear what Vedavyasa is saying. But your interpretations are like a big dark cloud obscuring all the real meanings of the Vedanta Sutra. Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya said, you have a better explanation. Lord Chaitanya said, please hear. And he explained the Vedanta Sutra from the point of view of Vaishnavism. That we are not God, we are not formless, homogeneously existing within the impersonal Brahman. But we are eternal servants of Krishna. We have an eternal form, and Krishna has an eternal form, and we are all meant to be his servant. If anyone called Lord Chaitanya Krishna, he would hold his ears and consider it blasphemy. And that's the way a Vaishnava is. Whereas for impersonalists, when they become so expert in presenting their ideas, if somebody says, oh, you are God, they are very much flattered. They're encouraged, thinking, this is very nice. He is called. This is the ultimate compliment. Someone may say, you are beautiful, or you are handsome, or you are learned, or you are so nice, or you are very kind and gentle. We like those compliments. But for an impersonalist, when someone says, you are God, you are Bhagavan, ah, yes, very, such a nice compliment. But for a devotee, if someone says, you are God, ah, I vomit in your face, you rascal. Don't ever say this again. This is disgusting. It's a blasphemy. I am the eternal servant of the Lord. That is how a devotee considers such a compliment. It is a disgrace. And why does a devotee think like that? Because since time immemorial, we've been trying to enjoy as a god. And somehow or other, finally, we've understood we are the servants, and we're just trying to just cast out this demon of desire to be God from our heart. And here comes a person encouraging us to accept that this is the reality. The devotee becomes fearful. Don't say this. It will contaminate my soul. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, in the role of a devotee, would cover his ears with his hands and cry out, Vishnu, 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 never say these things. So Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu explained Vedanta Sutra so nicely that Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya realized, actually, he is God. Otherwise, how could he explain like this? And Lord Chaitanya revealed his divine form of Krishna to Sarvabhauma. So what is important in the connection to this verse today is how Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya and Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu both understood and taught the great necessity of knowing with our human intelligence what is the difference between truth and illusion. What is reality? What is to our best interest and what is against our best interests? We must understand these things. The difference is that the Mayavadis have their interpretation of what is truth and what is illusion, and the Vaishnavas have a proper understanding, a perfect understanding according to the Shastra. But both agree that you have to understand what is truth and what is illusion in order to overcome the desires for illusion. That is what tapasya means. We understand this is not real. This is illusory. The world is not an illusion. The world is illusory, but it does exist. The illusion is that we are identifying ourselves as part of this world. That this world is me. But it is very, very necessary. If we want to change the quality of our desires, we must understand what is the internal energy and what is the external energy. What is the truth? So long as we cultivate desires and try to fulfill desires within material existence, we become endlessly bound karmically. And Krishna will reward us accordingly by giving forgetfulness of truth, and he will remind us time and again of what desires we actually have in our hearts. Not only will of what desires we actually have in our hearts. Not only will he give us the understanding of our desires from within, but he will also facilitate us in our attempt to fulfill those desires. As you approach Krishna, he will reward you accordingly. However, if we approach him understanding that Krishna is my supreme master and I am his servant, then Krishna will also continue to remind us and facilitate our devotional service. Neha vikramanasosti pratyavayo navidyate svalpam apyasya dharmasya trayate mahatobhaya. Krishna explains in Gita, even if you die as a devotee, whatever advancement you have made, you may not remember. You may not remember in your next life that I was living in Radha Gopinath's congregation. I was living as a brahmachari in the ashram, and my name was like this. And I looked in the mirror and I saw like this. And I used to like to eat very much idlis made by Devananda Pandit. You may not remember all those things. However, by the arrangement of Krishna in your next life, Krishna will awaken the desires, the aspirations, and all of the spiritual progress you have made will be there. You will be naturally, spontaneously attracted to Devananda Pandit's idlis, even though you may not know where is this great desire coming from. At a certain stage in your life, Krishna will remind you. You may be born in a place and you may not know, but then Krishna will bring you somehow to a temple of Radha and Krishna. And you think, oh, this is so nice. And you'll hear kirtan. This is so beautiful. And then you take one of Prabhupada's books and you read, yes, this is the truth. It's Paramatma, just awakening you to the desires for Krishna consciousness that is already within you and facilitating you to achieve the destination of your desires. We are always dependent on the mercy of Krishna at every stage of our material or spiritual existence. We should approach Krishna with a desire to serve, with a desire to surrender. That will never be lost until we return to the spiritual world. Then it is not lost, it is perfected. Rupa Goswami was explained by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu how that little seed, the Bhakti Lata Bij, grows by watering through hearing and chanting and performing the nine processes of devotional service. When Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu went to Udupi, the Tattvavadi philosophers met with him, and he took a very humble position, because he wanted to actually make them humble. The Lord is very expert. He took a humble position to make them humble. He said, I do not know what is the goal of life and how to achieve it. And they explained that by following the principles of Varna and Ashram very carefully, then you can achieve devotion to Vishnu. That is the perfection of life. And Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu explained that that is not the way to achieve the perfection of life. The way to achieve is by following the nine processes of devotional service, beginning hearing and chanting. Then we can achieve unmotivated, uninterrupted love for God. That a real devotee of the Lord does not desire any of the four types of liberation. He doesn't want impersonal liberation at all. He doesn't want to live in the spiritual world with the same qualities of the Lord, with the same bodily features of the Lord, with the same opulences of the Lord. He simply wants to serve the Lord in any condition. That is the perfection of life, and that can only be achieved through following these nine processes of devotional service. hearing the glories of the Lord, and chanting the holy names.
Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare.
They replied that yes, what you are saying is correct. It is the highest understanding of the Shastra. So Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has given us this rare gift of Krishna consciousness. At every moment we have the choice to pursue this gift or to pursue the so-called gifts that the external energy is presenting before us. Maya is also presenting so many gifts to us. Every object that attracts our minds or senses is a gift being presented by Maya. But what we do not, actually a devotee intellectually may understand, but still we don't have the determination to act according to that understanding. The understanding is all of these gifts of Maya, they all have the poison of material bondage within them. There may be a very beautifully decorated case, but inside is the snakes and scorpions of material bondage. If someone offers you some delicious food, if you know there's poison in it, you shouldn't take it, however nice it smells. Materialistic people, they do not know. They cannot discriminate. They just think, let me eat. A devotee knows there is poison in it, but still it smells so good. How can I resist it? Hare Krishna. Tapasya means I know there's poison in it, therefore, however it smells, however nicely it looks, however cordially people are offering it to me, I will not take it because I know it will poison my heart with egoistic desires and take me away from Krishna. That is tapasya. We must be very, very convinced and willing to accept what's favorable for devotional service and reject what is unfavorable for devotional service. It is explained in the previous verse how Krishna enters into the cosmic existence that he has created along with Kali, his external energy. Kali has, she is time personified within this material existence. She has her choppers and swords that are cutting everyone to pieces in the form of time. And Krishna is standing alongside of his most beloved and merciful Srimati Radharani, playing upon his flute. And we are between the two. There's Kali with her daggers, knives, and swords ready to slice us apart in the form of time, promising us everything. But in the end, all there is the sword. And there's Krishna playing his flute, saying, please come to my eternal service. And we have the choice. And according to the choices we make moment by moment, we are creating desires within our hearts. And that those desires will either uplift us or degrade us by Krishna's grace. So let us live our life in such a way that we petition Krishna's mercy to awaken our original natural spiritual desires and be promoted back into the spiritual sky Hare Krishna. Thank you very much. Is there any questions? Yes, Krishna Chandra Prabhu.
Maharaj, for every devotee, for every person, we say that who comes to Krishna consciousness through Lord Chaitanya's movement, we say that that's possible only through the causeless mercy of the Lord, comes to Guru, and at the same time there is also the laws of karma, and we say that once the devotee comes to this path, then Krishna takes care directly of this karma and directly of this devotee and not indirectly. So I'm a little confused as to how, I mean, we don't have the desire to come to this movement, we don't know how we've come here. So is it the interaction between the causeless mercy and laws of karma? Laws of karma for devotees don't really work.
We do not come to this movement because of the laws of karma. Directly. Indirectly, in a sense, the laws of karma create so much frustration and misery, ultimately, that certainly they do bring the soul to a point of seeking shelter. However, if we have cultivated Krishna consciousness in our previous lives, then by the causeless mercy of Krishna, out of his natural love for us, even if we have gone astray, he will bring us back. You may have made 57% Krishna consciousness in your last life. In your next life, it's still dormant within you, but you're chasing after the illusions of Maya. It is causeless mercy in the sense that it is only due to Krishna's kindness that he brings you back to where you left off and then gives you all facilities to continue on. And for others who may not have such sukritis of the past, through the spiritual master, through the Vaishnavas, through the various manifestations of Krishna in this world, it may be prasad, it may be the holy name, Krishna is causelessly inviting us back home, back to Godhead. In fact, he's inviting everyone. We have our choice whether we are to accept that causeless mercy or reject that causeless mercy. But the mercy is causeless in the sense that however advanced we may be, still the facilitation to become perfect is coming only by the grace of Krishna. It is not by our past good deeds. Our good deeds may just put us in a situation where we are more well-positioned to be exposed to Krishna's mercy. But it is only by that mercy, it is only by Krishna's love for us and concern for us that we are able to actually accept and we are actually able to progress. Therefore, Nityananda Prabhu, it is explained that he gave mercy so causelessly, the only price is just accept it. The laws of karma don't bring us to God. The laws of karma purpose is to ultimately frustrate us with being away from God. But it is the causeless mercy of Krishna and his representatives that bring us to God. We cannot say we come to Krishna consciousness due to our past karma, because karma is material. We come to Krishna consciousness by the mercy of Krishna. But due to our past karma, we may be in a state of mind where we are more willing to accept it, either due to piety or misery. Yes?
And that's clear as far as when as an adult person, but let's say when a child is born, we see that we can, a child may be born in a devotee family and goes completely astray due to his desires. And a child is born in a very difficult situation and yet ultimately because of his desire comes to Krishna consciousness. So there is also the element of the individual's desires. So the causeless mercy is available to all, but it will be determining. So initially the birth is determined by the law of karma, because how does one child be placed in a very difficult situation? Then we say that is because of the activities in the past. But in spite of that, someone in Russia has come to the movement, and someone who's born in a Vedic family may go completely astray. And so there are three elements, and therefore is it that the law of karma will decide at least where the child would be born, and then the causeless mercy would be available to for us to due to our desire to take us to Krishna consciousness?
Could I ask a favor of you?
Yes, ma'am.
Can you be seated nicely, and I'll be back in 2 minutes to try to answer your question. All right? Very well. Respond to my karma. How Krishna is directing us is very inconceivable at times and has many variables. Your question is very intelligent. The birth that we take in the material sense is strictly due to our karmic reactions. However, for a devotee, the Lord does what's best for us. We have our free will in every situation. A person may be born in a family of devotees and have every opportunity for Krishna consciousness, but because of misuse of free will, may at least temporarily leave devotional service altogether. That means that person is really cheating him or herself from the opportunity. That person may have worked so hard for spiritual benefits in the past, and now the fruits of those benefits are right there with all facility to go further. But we become attracted by material energy and we reject it. In another situation, a person may be a devotee in a past life, but Krishna may actually put that person in another type of birth. It could be for many reasons. It could be because Krishna knows, past, present, and future, that this will be the best situation for the person to become Krishna conscious. This devotee may be very sincere. Let me put him in a family in Russia where nobody's ever heard of Krishna. But then I will have him go through so many of the situations of that civilization and become so frustrated that when in the future, when he receives in downtown Moscow one of my most beloved devotees, Srila Prabhupada's books, then his heart will change. Krishna can put us in a situation like that too. In fact, in one purport of Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita, Srila Prabhupada explains that Lord Chaitanya, Lord Krishna, personally puts his devotees in the families of Malechas and Yavanas all over the world just to spread Lord Chaitanya's mercy to those people in those places. So it may, for a devotee, you cannot just explain things on the basis of karma. For a devotee, if Krishna puts a sincere person if Krishna puts you in a birth in Africa or Russia or America or Europe, it isn't simply because of karma. Krishna knows past, present, and future. Krishna is ultimately doing what's best for you in your spiritual life and will give you opportunity to progress in that situation. Now, Krishna may also put us in a situation, we may be a devotee, but we still have so many karmic desires. So he puts us in a condition where the karmic desires will be frustrated and the opportunity to continue our Krishna consciousness will continue. Okay. Does that answer your question? It is quite inconceivable how Krishna shows his causeless mercy. It is the natural course that if you become a very good devotee, you will take your next birth in a very nice devotee family, with all facility to continue. However, you can be a very good devotee and Krishna can put you in a totally non-devotee family. And then later on, give you all facility with many lessons to be learned. Krishna knows the innermost nature of our own hearts, and he's reciprocating with us accordingly. So ultimately, karma is an influence in our progress. But it is Krishna's mercy and Krishna's supreme intelligence that is the very basis of all of our spiritual advancement, if we accept it. Yes?
Maharaj, in reference to the discussion you mentioned between Srila Sarvam Bhattacharya and Gopinath Acharya, Gopinath Acharya explains that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is the supreme personality of Godhead, which Sarvam Bhattacharya does not accept. And then Gopinath Acharya says that unless you receive a slight trace of the mercy of the Lord, quoting Lord Brahma, you cannot understand. And explaining to you is like sowing in a barren land. And then Sarvam Bhattacharya is disturbed and he says, what is the evidence that you have received the mercy? And Gopinath Acharya says, knowledge of the Samam Bonam is the evidence. This particular statement, knowledge of the Samam, the proof that I have received the mercy is knowledge of the Samam Bonam. Can you explain how that is?
The Samam Bonam is devotional service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. If one has faith and one is in the process of surrendering to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, that is the evidence that one has received the mercy of the Lord. You have received the mercy of the Lord. And according to how you reciprocate with that mercy, you will become fortunate or unfortunate. But the greatest mercy is to understand Krishna as the Lord and to serve him, to be on the path of surrendering to him. That is knowledge of Samam Bonam. You cannot approach Krishna, you cannot engage in bhakti without the mercy of the Lord. And by doing so, it means you've understood the mercy of the Lord and you've accepted it. Any other question? Yes, Shankaranand Prabhu.
Sometimes in our devotional service, Maya also presents some allures.
Sometimes.
Always.
many times.
So, it is something like poisonous food. And devotees know that this is poisonous. But still, sometimes they are unable to avoid it. Mm. This is poisonous food. And basically we understand that everyone has acquired particular modes from the material nature which we are trying to overcome by the process of devotional service. But still, I mean, the choice which we make sometimes is basically based on because of the modes of material nature which we have acquired. So how to practically, on the practical level, avoid it? Although we may have knowledge, but how to avoid it?
By being very sincere. If we are sincere, we will put ourselves in a situation where we have the best strength to overcome the weaknesses within us. If a person in the past has a weakness to drinking alcohol and has so much ruined his or her life by drinking alcohol, then that person will have to use his or her own willpower to not do it. That person will have to use his or her own free will to do something else, because you cannot just be idle. And that person will also put oneself in an association or in an environment where we have the strength to overcome this weakness. If a person is trying to give up alcohol and every night goes to the permit rooms where they are serving alcohol, will you take him seriously? He says, "No, I want to give it up," while there's a drink in his hand. He will think, "You may want it, but you are not very serious about it. If you were serious, you would not be here. You would be at Radha Gopinath temple dancing and chanting with the devotees." So we have to be sincere. Yes, due to our previous activities, we have so many inclinations, bad habits. We have so many attractions to the three modes of material nature. We have created them in ourselves. We have been habituated to those things. We can give them up by the grace of God. Only by the grace of God. Daivihesu gunamayi mama maya duratyaya. Material nature is very difficult to overcome, but one who surrenders me can overcome it by my mercy. So what does it mean to surrender? It means to be sincere, to accept what's favorable. You have to do your part, but you have to put yourself in an environment where you're the strongest to resist. If we know how Maya can tempt us at any moment, how we will, if we're sincere, we'll chant our 16 rounds as attentive as possible. Know that this is my shelter from Maya. We'll associate with devotees as much as possible. We'll know this is my shelter from Maya. We'll read the books as carefully as possible, knowing that I have to do this to keep my intelligence aware of Maya. This is the sign of being sincere. If you are sincere, Krishna will help you, however much the modes of material nature are affecting you. Prepare yourself. Prepare yourself by taking those things and putting yourself in an atmosphere where you have strength to overcome the weaknesses that are so much haunting you. That is sincerity. And Krishna will help. Does that answer your question? Thank you. Hare Krishna. Srila Prabhupada ki.
For further details of this cassette, please contact Radhanath Swami Tape Ministry. Address is International Society for Krishna Consciousness, Sri Radha Gopinath Mandir, 7 KM Munshi Marg, Chowpatty, Bombay 400007, India.